All right, and welcome back to the Coast to Coast podcast. I am your host, Chad, and I'm here with two of our coasters. On the East Coast, we've got Dale, and up north, right off Lake Erie, we've got the delivery man, Chip. How are you two doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, also doing well.
We got a big show today. We are starting the kind of true off season. We're pretty much done recapping last season gameplay and time to start getting into who's on this Browns roster, what's going on in the off season, and you know, just some other things related to the formula and how we get this team rebuilt and back to where we all thought they were going to be this last season. So before we get into that, we have some programming changes. We are now going for the off season every other week. So we'll be with you today, and then next week will be a little bit of a gap week, and then we'll be back the very next week. And I believe that is March 8th, and that will fall in line, luckily, over the next 4 or 5 podcasts with a lot of pretty major off-season events, following up with the combine, following up with the start of free agency, then following up with owners meetings and the official start of the new off season. And that's really going to be kind of a fun way to recap it without spending week after week boring you with fake news or lack of news. All right. And let's get today going with our obvious start. You guys having any drinks with this podcast?
I am not, actually. So I'd be doing a disservice to our good friend Jim if I didn't mention that NASCAR kicked off this Sunday, the Daytona 500, and we had a few drinks. So
I heard you had a few drinks is an understatement.
Yeah. So I am not drinking today.
It's a long race.
Fair enough.
It was a good race. We like to play this game. It's pretty fun. We draw cards for what cars we have, and then, you know, you put $20 down, and whoever wins gets it. That's pretty fun. It makes it a little bit more entertaining.
So I've only got to play that once or twice, but I was immediately going to ask if you were playing, because that is, to me, the most interesting part of watching a NASCAR race with the Jim clan, because that game is always going on, and it's really fun to just have your cars lined up and have somebody to cheer for when you don't have the NASCAR knowledge of the other group that's
right. And it's, and it comes down to, it's just a luck of the pool of whatever card you grab, you know? So it's not like you have to have any real knowledge of who you believe is going to win.
Yeah. But you have something to cheer for. That's great.
And you need one guy out on the track, just wrecking everybody the whole race, and maybe you'll win.
Usually this track does come down to a big wreck. And you know what? I didn't remember a really big one. But Austin Cindric driving the number 2 Ford car, he did win. Give him a quick shout out.
That's definitely a person. Yep.
Yep.
I've heard of him. He exists.
Yep. So that was it.
Wasn't Keselowski just like knocking people off the track the whole race?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I don't know the details of it. I know that Brad Keselowski did get into his, he's part owner of Roush Motorsports now. So he left. He was actually the previous driver of the number 2 Ford car for Penske. And now he is driving his own car for his own team. And I'm sure that maybe he doesn't have a lot of fans among the racing world now, or I don't know. Maybe he did rub some people the wrong way. Again, I don't know. I can't confirm or deny. So yeah, you know what I got for you? Nothing.
I'm sure Jim can. We'll wait until
I'm sure Jim could fill you in a lot more than I can.
He's always so in the loop, and I just can't keep up. Two sports at a time, and off-season football for me counts as one. And obviously my other one right now is the Cavaliers, who we will be getting into just briefly today because the All-Star weekend happened. There was a lot of Cavs involved in every aspect of it, and I heard that there's a lot of good stuff coming out of there. Along with that, we'll be covering Browns team needs, you know, our first basic impression based on who's actually on this team. We're going to go over some salary cap stuff, which can be a little bit of a bore with the numbers, but it should be okay. I think we're really just going to highlight who is a possible cap casualty because they're owed so much, but pretty droppable. And then we are going to get into a lot of guys releasing their first, or for some people, their 18th mock draft. But this is the first week I've actually looked at any, and a lot of guys dropped their first one this week. So we'll take a look at that. And then if we have time, we'll go over some recent kind of big media takes around the teams and some cliches of the offseason and rankings and mock drafts and all of that along the way. All right. Let's get into it. First thing we started with is team needs. And this was just my idea of just the first impression team needs, because we're going to get into free agency. We're going to get into the draft as it happens. But I think you can just look at your team, no matter who they are in the NFL, and whether you know all the free agents that are leaving or you just know how the team looked that year, there's always this first impression of we are definitely short this compared to the other teams. And so that's where I started with my list. And the first one I had on the list was wide receiver. And I think we probably all agree on this one, right? That this is going to be a huge need that's going to get addressed at least one fashion, if not two, in the offseason.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm actually curious to get into this with Dale because we touched base on it real briefly, but it sounds like we both have different takes on how to handle this going forward.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do, and I think that's fair because I think at this point in the season, in the offseason, if you're certain on how this has to be done, you're probably just full of crap. And even as things go along, we've seen that it's less of a matter sometimes of where you pick your guys or how you get them. It's a matter of whether they work out, honestly. You know, we were starved at running back at one point, and I think it was very clear we needed one, and half of the world thought we absolutely needed Barkley because he was the best one, and we were picking a spot where we get him. And I think most people are pretty happy with the way they pulled it off, because the guy we have turned out to be great. So that's what it's really going to come down to. And we won't know till later, but it's a fun debate to see.
We could have ended up with Sony Michel, right?
We could have, yeah. I mean, it's just, and it wouldn't have mattered. We picked him in the first, second, or third round. People would be not very happy about who we have rostered. So we'll get into that. I had written down a little side note. I will be shocked if we don't address this in at least two spots. If we don't address this possibly internally, but also with free agency and the draft. Is that kind of the feeling you guys are getting?
Yeah, I think all of the above makes sense. I'm not stuck to kind of one way or another. You make a pretty good point there, but I think I don't know if we all agree that that's, if not number one, number two, but it's up there as far as most important positions.
Oh yeah, I agree. To me, it really comes down to wide receiver and defensive line, interior defensive line, I should say. And that's saying we sign Clowney, and I'm assuming that's how it's going to go down. But
yeah, and I am not assuming that yet, but I am. I think we did our thumbs up conversation, and we are all very hopeful that that is the case. And I looked at just the initial list of free agents available, and we'll get into that in a completely different podcast, but it is not as promising as it was. And if we can nab him, that really makes it, you just feel pretty comfortable with that. It makes it so you don't feel desperate to get something else. So I'm glad you brought that up for two reasons, Chip. Number one, that is to me, I would say, borderline equal in terms of team needs. And if they just came out and said, hey, you can only have two positions in the offseason, and I'm trying to build a winner, those are the two positions almost equal that I think this team is severely lacking. I just don't know how we go into next year status quo at receiver, and I don't know how we go in next year so shorthanded at especially the interior portion of the defensive line. This one's going to be interesting too, because I don't think it's being talked about as much, because obviously, as important as that position is, it's not as fun in the offseason as running backs, receivers, and quarterbacks.
Yeah.
There's only one interior D lineman that people care about, and he just won his team the Super Bowl. So it's the only real one that people get worked up to talk about.
Yeah, and it's underrated, because I think the Bengals defensive linemen really overperformed this year. And so with those two things, you know, coming together, it's obvious how important that position is. So yeah, so that's going to be my number two. And then the second thing, Chip, for the sake of argument, whenever I'm talking about the off season, I'm always sort of thinking I'm always assuming anybody that we have as a free agent is just gone. And I only do that because then when I talk about who we can fill in a position, like for instance, if it was on edge, I will consider like Jadeveon Clowney is my number one choice to fill that position. So he's not under contract, or I guess he has a voidable contract and everyone says he's definitely going to, so he can resign. But that is like, I would have considered the opposite, sort of like he's not really on the team, but I sure hope he is. I hope that's our number one target on that, in that spot. Then otherwise you had just added one also, Dale. Is that a position you're feeling pretty weak or pretty thin?
I think pretty thin. I'm not, and again, that's considering who we could lose, or assuming we do lose Smith and Walker Jr.
Yeah, and obviously Dale's talking about inside linebacker. I should have mentioned
had
mentioned that was one of his concerns, and yeah.
If it's not of a high priority to me, though, honestly, there's probably two other positions I'd focus on before that one. But it is something that I do think we're going to address one way or another. And I think similar to interior defensive line, like there's just not a lot of big names in that position anymore. The significance that they play, while I think is important, it's just not as flashy as it once was. So it will be something that I think the team pays attention to, but just might not be like any real big news or anything though.
Can I throw out a name there that a lot of people I think are starting to forget about for middle linebacker is Jacob Phillips. If he comes back for, I believe it would be his third year here, I'm thinking he can probably start at middle linebacker. And as long as you sign either Walker or Smith, I'm not saying that's an answer, or I'm, you know, putting that up against anybody.
That's a good scenario though. That's not something I'd considered.
I'm just saying, yeah, that gives me a little bit, I can sleep better at night knowing that that's my middle linebacker room.
Chip, I can tell you this, that's what they're hoping for. I think when they drafted that kid, the way they talked about him after they took him in the draft two drafts ago, they were so high on that kid, and he's had some unfortunate injury issues, but for me, from a PT standpoint, they're not the type of injuries that make me think he's going to have a poor or short career. It at least appears as if it's just a lot of unfortunate luck of him hurting things at the wrong times, where he doesn't get a chance, you know, like in training camps, for instance, where he doesn't really get a chance to get in the lineup and to see what he does. But even coming back from those injuries, he's usually thrown right back in the mix when he gets back. And he's performed fairly well without a lot of practice, without a lot of chemistry, and without a lot of experience. So that does make me think if he can get on the field, you might be right. He may be the inside linebacker they're hoping for. And we're obviously not worried about JOK on this podcast.
I was just going to say, he's good. I was just going to say Jacob Phillips is a good tackler too. That's all I was going to throw in there real quick.
And with the two guys leaving, I think that would be the concern, is they're young, and with Walker leaving for free agency, and with Smith both being our two most veteran presence leaving for free agency, I agree with Dale that it'd be nice if one of them could come back, because I don't think they'll be incredibly high priced. And sorry, Dale is currently, is that Dale that's doing that? Dale is currently increasing the size of the K for kicker for our next position as large as it can go on the outline. Dale, would you like to mention your thoughts on the kicking situation?
It's just something that needs to be addressed. I don't know. I don't know.
Watching this pink K grow and grow and grow.
Dale wants his McPherson bad.
It's just something. I mean, look, you need a quarterback and a kicker. It seems like, I mean, all of these games in the playoffs were that close, and that's just the way the NFL is trending with how close these games are. It's funny whenever I hear all these stats of like, oh, in one score games, you know how many games are one score games? Like 90 something, like low 90s.
You're right.
Most of them are one score games. So it's actually, I think, pretty misleading when people start throwing out stats like, well, in one score games, like, well, most of them are. Yeah. And most of them come down to that. It's why Vegas lines are 3 points in a lot of cases.
And I got some grief for this before, but I'll say it again. The Bengals aren't even through the first round of that playoffs. If they even make it at all, if they don't have a kicker who was as stellar as their kicker was this year, because he got them wins and he won them games in the regular season and in the playoffs by under 3 points in games where he kicked at the end. And I don't trust that we have that. I don't trust that if we were playing the Raiders and we're needing a kick to win the game, we make it, and maybe they're the team that moves on.
We had joked about it at the beginning of the season, like the, and then immediately ate crow, and I don't think vindicated feels right to say, because he really did play well. So I don't care if they can work with him to help figure it out, but like, if we don't see someone else in there at least as like training camp competition, like, I'm going to be heading into this season feeling the exact same way, just like really not confident.
So you brought up a good segue there, and we'll get to it later. I'm not going to mention it now, but little spoiler. We have an off-season trope about competition that I'm wondering what you guys think about towards the end. And I'll just say, in this situation, it follows a very different take as far as offseason or early season competition. And I think it's best to have as many as you can in camp, because not only can they, you see what they do under pressure, which is sort of their job. You have guys pushing each other, and you also have a guy sitting there waiting, whoever you cut, just in case he doesn't get re-signed with someone else, in case you do need that next person, which has happened for the Browns more than once, where they've had a training camp competition, one guy makes it, he gets hurt, you know, 2 months later, and we bring back the other guy they had in the competition. So it might come up. And the Bengals did it right, man. Getting a kicker that is actually like a fan favorite, I'm not shooting for that, but that was like the all-time scenario, wasn't it? Everybody loves that kid.
It seems like he's got the right attitude too. Like
he's cool. He's cool. Next up, I think, is a pretty obvious one we talked about a little bit, is with Jadeveon Clowney possibly not coming back. And we're hopeful, but no guarantees. We know the guy wants his money, and somebody may be willing to give him a little more. But for me, that's edge. I think with Tack McKinley not really working out this year and also not under contract, and then Clowney possibly leaving, even if they can keep Clowney, which I think is a must attempt, you need some depth at that spot, and they don't have it.
No, yeah. Odenegbo's leaving, and we have our anchor, right? So we have Miles. Like, he's going to be there. It just wouldn't surprise me if this kind of turns into a rotating position, kind of year over year, where it's like, okay, bring in some veterans, bring in some lower price guys, and let them try to make a couple bucks. And if we can keep them, if they work out, great. If not, we're going to grab some more guys next year, because we know we have that anchor. I don't know if that's really what they'll do, but it seems like it's been the plan so far. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And it's nice, because I think there's a lot of, I think are make-believe takes out there about guys will come and play for you because of this. I think it's very reasonable to think guys watch Clowney struggle in the last year of his career and a little bit the year before that, getting no sacks, getting injured, and then coming to Cleveland this year and playing extraordinarily well, some of his best ball and some of his highest sack numbers across from Myles Garrett. And I think that's going to be a tempting thing for either a young or veteran guy who wants to come in here. So we'll see which direction they go. I would be comfortable with Clowney, and I've been a bit of a Clowney skeptic because I've been worried about his injuries and his need to get that next money contract, but he seemed to like it. He spoke up saying he wants to stay here, and it was really kind of out of term. It wasn't really asked or anything. So it makes me think we might have a shot with him, and I hope we get him at a reasonable rate. So, I mean, he's worth a lot. I mean, he played like a $13, $14, $15 million edge this year. So that's a lot of money in the same position, but it's an important position.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty confident on him coming back, to be honest with you. I think he likes it here, and as far as his teammates in the locker room goes, I thought he was about as happy as he's been in the league.
He seemed it, didn't he? He's the type of guy who the locker room always seems to like him. I've always heard good things. Much like, as much as we hate to hear it, Odell, it seems like the guys like him, even though in the media or outside you're like, he seems kind of like a turnoff. But there's things that obviously are personable, because the guys in the locker room for a guy like Clowney just love him, even though he's left teams and he's very open about wanting, you know, big money contracts. And that usually could be like but nope, guys really like him.
I do think guys also just respect, like, you only get to make so much money in the league. Like, most of the guys in the league are all about just like, go get your money.
Yeah.
Except for
the last. Yeah. He's like, I'm just going to sit out, and I'm sure someone will pay me double next year.
And all my teammates will support me.
The last one is kind of questionable. I put it at tight end, just knowing that this is a team that wants multiple tight ends, and Njoku is not a guarantee. And without him, one way or another, we're going to have to bring in at least one more. I thought they were kind of one short this year.
I'm honestly offended you are discounting Harrison Bryant like this. That's all that I'm hearing. After
he's a great young prospect, and I'll say this: I'm a big believer that tight ends kind of come around later. You know, unless you're a superstar.
Yeah, it's pretty well established, and he's still a pretty young guy. So
in late, like 27, like they 26, a lot of them get their first breakout year somewhat late. So, and he could be that kind of guy. I love his passion. I love his fire. I love his toughness. So I wouldn't be shocked if he comes out and he's a little bit, that grinder mentality works as he gets better at route running and more savvy at reading defensive players. But we'll see. It'd be nice to, we are very stuck with Hooper, and I don't hate it, because I think, even though we give him a lot of crap because he's paid way too much and he should be better, he's not a terrible option. But I think him and Brian are there for good. And there's a lot of, the reason I put this here is because Njoku is in a mix of a lot of free agent tight ends. And when we get to the free agent pod, we'll see how many are left that haven't been re-signed by their own teams. But there's a lot out there this year, more than I can remember ever.
There's a lot of older ones too. So I'm excited to get into that one a little bit, because I think there's actually going to be a lot of guys that are just walking away this year.
They're all over the place, and it's going to be interesting, because if we didn't happen to land Njoku, I think there are guys out there for the grab who are anywhere from at the end of the line, which is fine when you have Hooper and Bryant, to somebody who's young and could, after this contract ends and we very unlikely re-sign him again. But yeah, so that was my kind of list there. You guys added a couple to it. Is there anybody else that just sticks out to you?
No, but real quick, back to the tight end. It felt like we kind of really touched base a lot on Harrison Bryant. But to Njoku's point, I really, really want to see him back here. I think he's as athletic as a tight end can be. And I don't think he ever really got the attention he deserved, you know, on the field. I think if, you know, we get the ball in his hands a little bit more, I'd be excited to see
don't disagree at all. And I think a lot of us gave him two thumbs up for coming back.
Yeah.
Just to go back to that last point, Njoku's only 25 years old.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. And Andrew Barry likes
the decimal.
Andrew Barry I'll bring up the decimal. But Andrew Barry definitely likes his players around that 23 to 25 range. As far as what I see him bringing in outside of Malik Jackson.
Yeah.
And it seemed like he really wanted to be here too, which was a change from where things really started. Swift. So I think he still is in an upward trajectory, and yeah, I think we're all in agreement there. We'd definitely like to see him back.
He's 25.6. So he's closing. He's about halfway.
Yeah. 25 and a half. I'll take it. As long as it's not like 29.8 or 9, I'm always like, okay, that's 26, man.
Right.
But yeah, so he's about 25. So there's good reason to believe if you can get him at a decent deal, his best years may be the next three and not the last three. And if you think about before this past year, his first 2 years, he had just really good numbers and showings, if not through the season, in little spots game by game. And I think we saw more from him this year in again, little inconsistent spots. And if he gets consistent, he will be dangerous. So I would love that. I'm glad you brought that back up, Chip, because that is a guy who really should be top of the line on their radar for re-signs. Dale, do you want to take us through this draft order?
Yeah, just want to give a little context here on the draft. What's coming up as far as our picks go. We do have, I think it's looking like 9 picks. We do have a compensatory coming from losing someone in the front office. On looking back through, we do not have any compensatory picks coming from losing any players for this season coming to us. So nothing in the way of lost players. But I think the big ones most people think about are first four, are 13, 44, 78, 98. There's a couple right after that are kind of in the more impactful zone. Having four in the top 100 is always good, and Barry's done well there. Unfortunately, most of those are ours because of our record. So we'll have that. And like we talked about earlier, it's going to be interesting to get in to see who's kind of getting mocked to us and where people are thinking we're going to go with 13 there. I know one thing, we'll have plenty of options.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to get into some of that. There's going to be guys all over the place that are going to be in hot debate. It's kind of a fun one because even though the positions, we're going to hear a lot of the same position as we get into that, we're going to hear a lot of different guys because there's just still pretty hot debate. And as combines and things happen, that's going to change. I read, so the compensatory pick is going to be a third rounder, right, Dale?
Yeah. So this year and then the following.
Yeah, that's the thing I read recently that I did not know. We get 2 years of third rounders. And is that in this list or does that have yet to be added?
I thought that it was already included in there, which would have made it there.
Probably I believe 98, right?
Yeah, it'd be the later.
Yeah. Okay. So 78 and then 98 is the compensatory third rounder. Pretty nice to have when you have a GM that's been pretty successful so far to have a first, a high second and two thirds. That's pretty nice because he has shown a lot along the way that he can make good use of those picks with guys that can contribute quickly. And
I did want to call out the picks there too, just because I know we're talking about free agency and things like that. And having kind of both of those avenues to fill in some of the spots of need. And as far as our cap space is concerned, we're in the top kind of third of the league in cap space. So just for
number 9 or 10, I think.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking around 23.5 million projected. So, hey, I mean, to have that many picks in the top 100 and 23 million, it really does give kind of Barry and team a lot of flexibility in how they address some of those needs we just walked through.
Yeah, and I think that's worth mentioning because, like, we went over just a second ago, right? We just went over our most pressing needs. And I think it is interesting to see, you hope it doesn't go like everybody thinks. Your first rounder works, your second rounder is a starter, your third rounder is a backup. It doesn't always go like that. But what you're hoping is four contributing and impactful guys coming out of each draft with some others useful pieces along the way. And you're hoping one of them is a star and at least one or two of them become starters soon. And knowing that we have only a handful of real needs and that many picks means free agency is going to be just this added bonus where we have all that cap space to spend and we'll have all these picks. And between the two of those, you kind of start taking out the idea of drafting for need because some of those need places get filled and you can really pick who you want. And the reality is, a lot of times those two things overlap. It's not like we have a receiver graded, right here, but we need edge more, and this edge is graded so much higher. A lot of times those two fall together, and you just pick the need mixed with the talent. And I think that's the way to do it, really, when you're in a position where the Browns are, where you can probably make a run if things go right. So, moving on to the next section is basically something I've been wanting to talk about for a couple of weeks, but it makes much more sense now. So we kind of kept moving it. It's basically the dead cap money and the salary cap numbers for what I would call possible cap casualty guys. So essentially what this is a list of a couple guys who have very little money owed and guaranteed left, but if they're cut, you get a huge bounce back on their salary cap. And then I included along the way a couple guys who I keep hearing through the podcast, through friends, through Twitter, or through just reading Brown stuff, people that everybody kind of wants to cut. And so I also included whether those people are a realistic cut at all or not. Because sometimes you get in this mode of, I'm mad at this receiver, I'm mad at this lineman he's always holding. We should just cut him without realizing if you cut him, you have to pay his whole salary and you therefore don't have the money to bring somebody else in his spot. So it's better just to keep him and sign somebody. So that's kind of how I've broken down. And it's pretty short. The first one is Jarvis Landry, which is appropriate because man, has he been all over the news today. We'll have a separate talk about him after this cap section about some of the stuff that's going on in his social media and some of the coverage of him lately, and actually what we think of him and where we want him. But here is where a lot of it is coming from, is there's this assumption out there, this overall narrative that Jarvis is probably gone. Along with kind of a plea from a lot of people, including myself, that he maybe should restructure because some of us don't want him actually gone. But the reason for this is because the way his contract was structured, he only is owed $1.5 million if we cut him at any point this offseason, including in the summer. So these numbers are that we go over are all about the same whether we cut somebody right now or we cut them in the summer. And that's just to let everybody know if they don't get cut now, that doesn't mean they won't be a training camp casualty because the same scenario exists. But it allows the team to bring other guys in, see where they're at, and then decide. So Jarvis Landry's was the big one. 1.5 million owed. If he's cut anytime before the season starts, the Browns get owe him 1.5 million and get 50 savings on their salary cap. What do you guys think there?
It's hard to say when I'm talking about Landry because I mean I get a little emotional because he's been such a tough anchor for the team and gave me faith when I needed it. And then at the same time, I mean that's a lot of money if we're trying to build a competitive team here. And I'm not doubting Landry and his ability. But last year wasn't, his best year. I can't assume he's going to get better considering his injuries and what I've read. Yeah, I understand
that. And he is 29.1 years old.
Right, right. It's a tough world we live in when you know, I mean, a lot of that is really coming down to whether or not he's going to have a job here. And
it's tough. I mean, we knew that going into the whole deal with him, right? I mean, I think a lot of people don't think about it, but
really like
yeah.
it.
We forgot about the whole deal to get him here was like, we need to overpay him. Like we for years had to overpay all of our free agents, but we needed to overpay an actual adult to come in and show us like the team, like what leadership was. And it's kind of corny, like some of those things are, but like the whole Hard Knock speech, probably the most impactful one like anyone's given on that show ever. And it's a big deal. So is it, are we going to be a little more like the NBA here and cover a guy when we can? We're not the Saints. Like you said, we have the cap space. Is there a possibility to restructure or do something? I would think so. I would hope so.
Yeah. The interesting thing, though, when you mention that, Dale, is when you say what free cap space we have, that's with the assumption that we are still going to be paying Jarvis.
Yeah.
So we don't really have to use any of that cap space. So if we're number nine, let's say, in cap space right now, if we keep Jarvis, we remain number nine. We're not going to
resign. I didn't realize that.
This 15 puts us probably at number like 5. Because all of a sudden we'd have 15 more million, but we'd have one less Jarvis. So that's kind of the reason I wanted to go over this, so people kind of understand where that is. So if we lose Jarvis, I guess the best question would be, can you use about that 15 million to get something better? And that's going to be the teams where guys who know way more than us about his ability, his injuries, his role in the locker room, whether or not they think they can bring in a Chris Godwin at $15 million a year or a
it's going to be Chark. More than that though. That's the thing, right? So you're
right. So that's what I was just going to get into.
And the team is so depleted. So what are we bringing in? Are we bringing in two sevens?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to get into. Cause the way I see Landry excelling for this team in the future is kind of like a sixth man in basketball. I don't want to give him the role of one or two, but if he can just like play the slot and dig us out of ruts when we're in them and be that anchor we needed and that tough guy to keep fighting for yards when we need it, but not put the workload on him. Like so often we're like, look, Landry, we need to get out there and take 11, 12 catches today. And it's like, I just don't, he's hurt. He's getting older. I mean, he's great when he's healthy. So let's try to keep him healthy.
Yeah. Okay, we'll bounce back to Jarvis and some other issues coming up. The next one is going to be interesting because the next one is J.C. Treader. He's the next big hit. If he's cut, the Browns will only owe him $1.5 million, and they'll get $8 million added to their salary cap. The reason this is impactful is because he has been. The rumor I heard was that he hasn't been practicing throughout this entire year because his knees are just that bad. But in the games, he's shown up. He's played very well, and you have to wonder, though, as he gets older, how sustainable that is, and that goes along with the idea that 2 years ago you drafted a center to play backup who you were hoping would eventually be his replacement, and you just kind of wonder if you want to get that guy in and moving. So he's a guy, and I'd be willing to bet if he is a cut, he is a very late cut. Because I don't see any reason you would let a guy like that walk out of your building with who he is for the team, in the line, in the league, before you absolutely had to. But maybe they can feel it out for a long time. But that is one. About $1.5 million if we cut him off, and about $8 million back on our cap to re-sign some more guys if we let him walk.
Chad, I think that's a really good point you bring there around the timing of cutting. I would agree. It doesn't financially. Yeah, there's money there, but consistent O-line play is so important. And obviously Baker needs that. So I would agree that I hadn't thought about it like that, but if he's like willing and able and he's healthy, I can't imagine that they would they would move
again
on.
These are all guys under contract, so it's not like he's got to be re-signed or talked to. It's just you run through, and if you're deciding it's not working, he is about an $8 million bounce back. If you're going through all your offseason training and you're like, wow, this backup center has really gotten good, I think we can move on. The next one is a really big one, and that's Case Keenum. I don't know where you guys are on Case Keenum. I was very happy with how Nick Mullins played in a spot role compared to Case Keenum, but Case Keenum is about $7 million refund if they let him walk, and only $1.3 million dead cap that
well,
they have
well,
to
Well, Chad, pay. I got to say, open the door and let him out. I wouldn't even try to fight that because we didn't use him anyways. Now, if we were using him as a backup, I would argue let's keep him here. But
that's
we didn't use him. We didn't even use him anyways. Even
that's
when Baker
take.
Was hurt, we're still playing Baker. So
it
in
either
that
tells
scenario,
you...
I'm opening the door for Keenum and said, hey, thank you for being, you know, everything you did.
Yeah,
I'll see you
later. I totally agree. I think it was very clear that they either don't trust Keenum to play and they don't think he's that good, or you know, or they're just not big on throwing in their backup, in which case that's a lot of money for somebody. And I know people wanted him there because he was a high paid backup, but he was an experienced backup. He had been to the playoffs before and he has some physical similarities to Baker, maybe less arm, but similar size. And so people thought Baker can learn a lot from this guy. I'm just going to say right now, Baker's going into his fifth year. If he still needs to learn, you can always learn. You can always have veteran presence. You can always talk to your teammates and coaches. If he still needs Case Keenum, we're in deep shit either way.
Yeah, I'm not sure at this point I'm sure he's getting some things out of it, but he's not a rookie. He's not a second-year player anymore. There's other guys who could help in that same coachy kind of way. For a lot less, like he's a high price backup, and to your point, Chip, to not even use him, like, just light the money on fire. It's not even mine; just light it on fire.
I mean, they really did bring in Nick Mullins, and he played what? He played the same amount. He played one game less than Keenum. Keenum played two. Mullins played one. They played pretty similarly, so I don't know.
Equally fantastic.
Yeah, great. The whole three of them were a problem this year. But next one, and this one I do not want people to take the wrong way. Kareem Hunt is due $0 if he is cut at any point this offseason. I think every single person will immediately tweet or message me when they hear this and say, trade him. Yes, that would be great. If someone really wants him, we get a trade for him because we have a young, really dynamic runner and Felton, who I do think is going to end up being more of a receiver, but then also Dearness Johnson is restricted and we can re-sign him. They're both about the same age. So, and I just love, as much as I think Dearness is amazing, I just love when Hunt is on the field, but it is something to keep an eye on because if they cut him, he's one of the few guys they owe nothing to. So, and then the last one I added, borderline is a joke, is Mack Wilson is due $0 apparently this year. And if we cut him, we get back a nice hefty $2.5 million.
Oh, wow.
That's a pretty good salary for him, right? That being said, as much as I give him maybe more crap than everybody else on the team, he may have played some of his best ball this year. And for $2.5 million, if you're just going to have to replace another linebacker anyway, that might be worth having around. What do you guys think of the Hunt and Wilson situation?
The Hunt one, as a selfish Nick Chubb dynasty holder, I say we just need to ship him off for anything that we can get and give Chubb the rock 40 times a game.
Who agrees with you? Jim, who is a dynasty Hunt owner.
Yeah, football-wise, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, I know we have Dearness, so it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, when you have a Nick Chubb, you really want to make sure you have two more guys behind him you're allocating resources towards. But
this whole fan base is dying for Nick Chubb to just tote the rock 25 times a game for one season.
The weird thing is it just seems like a lot of money to that position across three. Like, it doesn't, honestly, it doesn't matter if it's one person or three. And
yeah, you're right.
Nick Chubb did take a, like, not outrageous contract. So I think we were all, like, pretty happy about that.
Wow. It's so hard to pull that off. And they got two guys to do it.
But again, just like the backup quarterback, if you're investing that kind of money into it, you're kind of hoping you're using it.
At least we are. They're splitting carries.
Yeah, well, he missed a lot of time this year. Somebody brought up earlier in the season, earlier in the week, and I didn't realize this. He missed about 50% of the season. I didn't know he was out that much. But his numbers didn't even register to give him a place on PFF because he didn't have enough carries. He didn't have enough snaps, not carries. He didn't have enough snaps to register in the rankings.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was right in the middle of the season because at the beginning of the season – him and Chubb were both like top three in the league in like yards after broken tackle. And then he just missed most of the middle of the season.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I just thought that was kind of a strange thing to hear because it didn't sink. So the next two, I'm only bringing up and we won't even bother to talk about them. The two guys I've heard the most this offseason or during the season that we need to just get rid of and cut bait with, and you guys can tell me if you remember anything else or you disagree, were Austin Hooper and Baker Mayfield. I don't know that we have been saying that, but that's sort of what I keep hearing is this guy needs cut, this guy needs cut.
I think that goes back to your prior comment about, what does it cost us? Mm-hmm. And Baker's an almost $19 million dead cap. We have no cap savings, and also we have no alternative as of yet.
That's so just a technicality.
It's one of those things where maybe that gets clicks or page views or eyes on TV, whatever it is. But like, it's just one of those kind of nonsensical things, and I don't have the Hooper contract up. I think it's similar where like we don't have an out. Like there's a lot of people talk about like Ezekiel Elliott being like washed as a running back and hey, play Tony Pollard. He's younger. Well, you can't, you literally can't based on the contract that was handed to him. You're going to play him until literally the wheels fall off. It just, the money is going to talk in those situations. Like teams are just not eating that money.
Yeah, and I think it follows with both of these guys. And, of course, the way they both had played this year, I don't think it's a possibility. I'm not sure who's looking. But if you can't trade these guys, you probably have to keep them because you can't pick up another quarterback for a huge salary, a starting quarterback salary, and also be paying Baker Mayfield $19 million to either sit or get cut. And it just doesn't make sense. And then Austin Hooper's is $11 million dead cap. And we only save $2 million towards the cap if we cut him. So that's just another one where it's like, well, did he play so poorly that you want to just waste $11 million not having him? Probably not.
I know we've talked a lot of kind of different numbers, just a little perspective. So like, Landry is our second. He's like our highest non-quarterback cap hit at $16 million. And even Baker at 18, like that is nothing compared to some of the cap hits around the league. And with the amount of money we have left, like some of the amounts that we've gone over tonight are just, they're impactful. And that, it gives you a lot of flexibility. The GM's a lot of flexibility in what they can do, who they can bring in. But like, we're in a good spot to be able to make a lot of moves if they want to. So that's why I'm really intrigued to see kind of how some of these offseason moves go. And because we have the flexibility to literally run it back, add some more, and just add a bunch of guys. Like we don't need to actually get rid of anybody. We can re-sign.
Right, that's the idea. We can sign re-sign
all of our free agents if we want to. I know so we don't. But
the only other player on this is Jack Conklin, who is injured. And so I could see down the line if things don't work out with his rehab because it's a very bad injury. seeing whether it'd be worth cutting him. Just so people know, he's about a $9 million cap hit with only a $6 million savings. So you got a $15 million guy, you're only getting $6 million back if you cut him. Keep an eye out, though, because in training camp later, if we were to cut him after June 1st anytime, he all of a sudden becomes a $12 million cap savings and a $3 million hit. That's only impactful to me if we sign another tackle, because by then you probably can't get your hands on anybody. But that's another guy here you're looking to probably keep around, and just that's the type of injury that may take halfway through the season before he's actually recovered, if at all. And so you're kind of just crossing your fingers and hoping there. All right. And I just have been wanting to take everybody through that for a long time, because it's just something that kind of opens your eyes to who can actually come and go, and what that means if they come. The biggest one in that list, I think, was Jarvis Landry. So I wanted to touch on him a little more. I have this weird Jarvis Landry culture conundrum in my head that I keep hearing, and Dale, you said it earlier, so we have a mild disagreement on this, although only mild, because I kind of get your point the way you worded it. What are your guys' feelings on Jarvis Landry? And for those who don't know out there, the real idea came from the fact that Jarvis posted some really not that cryptic tweets and Instagram stuff this morning. One was a long list of kind of just, it seemed like very much venting, like he must be reading bad storylines and saying, just so y'all know, essentially, and I'll paraphrase, I was very injured this year. I got injured in week 2. I came in and played anyway. You didn't hear me complain about it. I probably came back too early and it hurt me, but I pushed through. I've given everything to this team. I've given everything to the city, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, so you guys can just squash your bad storylines, which I kind of agree with, because he's been kind of getting crushed as if he's already cut from the team, which is unfair because he's not yet. But at the same time, and then he followed with a Instagram post, I believe, where it's just him in the car listening to a talk of, are you not where you're supposed to be? If you're not where you're supposed to be, maybe stop thinking about where you're not supposed to be and just focus on where you are and just make the best of that. And even if you're not, you know, where you should be. And it's just kind of this kind of a, I don't know where it's from. It sounds like it was from a movie or something. I wasn't familiar. It didn't click right away. But, it brought up a giant explosion all over social media, podcast stories, radio today. And I was just curious if you guys saw that and what you thought about it, and if it changes your idea on his leadership, or whether it bothers you at all, or whether you kind of just think, I'm going to let it roll.
Chad, it doesn't bother me, because he's been nothing but a professional here in Cleveland. And to his thought process there, if I'm putting myself in his shoes, his best friend just left and got a Super Bowl ring. Mm-hmm. He's as talented in different ways as Odell, in my opinion.
I agree with that.
I mean, obviously he's not the speed playmaker that he is, but I think he's got better hands, better route runner.
Been as productive through his career.
Yeah, okay. That's a better way of putting it. So I think he is as deserving of a championship ring as any receiver in the league. And wouldn't these thoughts be going through your head if you were in his shoes? But he's been nothing but a professional here, so I'm not going to give him a hard time. I hope I see him here next year. But at the same time, I don't think I would reach and overpay him. So I guess I'm going to have to just see how that works out with Andrew Berry and Jarvis. And In any case, he'll always have a place in my heart for the professionalism, the fight, the representing Cleveland in the best way possible, in my opinion. With like Dale brought up the speech from Hard Knocks. I mean, we're going to be talking about that legendary speech.
Yeah. So I agree with that. Actually, I agree with all of that. I think that's a really good take. I think a lot of people agree with you. And I think if he leaves, there's going to be some hatred at first. And I mean, come on, Cleveland hated LeBron for a minute when he left. It's an overly passionate sports town. They're going to get on him. In everybody's hearts, I feel people feel like you, that Jarvis will always be sort of a special player for this franchise and team. which is why I was really hopeful to find that balance and be able to restructure with him, get him at a fair price, get him in a role where
he really suits. I don't want to disrupt your take, but I got one more thing I wanted to say too. And it's very uncommon that somebody gets traded to a team and kind of becomes a face of that team. It's almost hard to believe he was drafted by the Dolphins and played, what, 3 to 4 years there?
Mm-hmm. Four.
And he's kind of like the face of the Browns now.
Yeah, and he was very productive for the Dolphins. He's had, I think, a couple less receptions when you look at his overall numbers, but much better yards per reception, much better total yards. It's good to say he probably was better here, minus some of the injuries, because he has a little more injuries here, but he's probably been better here, and he's probably been much more impactful and appreciated here. So, yeah, that's a good call. What, do you have anything to add to that, Dale, or did Chip pretty much nail it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I give him a pass on anything right now. Like, everyone just left pissed. Like, what a miserable way for, like, half the team to literally limp off the field. Like, everybody was hurt. Like, we missed the playoffs. Everyone's talking about either getting cut or traded or contracts renegotiated. Like, and Chip, you mentioned, like, yeah, I'm sure he's really happy for his best friend, but, like, also not super thrilled he doesn't get to play with him anymore, that it, like, literally did it. It just didn't work out in the worst way possible for him in Cleveland. And, yeah, I can't imagine, like, too many people besides, like, Myles Garrett, like, swatting, like, balls out of like Migo's hand and like dunking. Like, no one else is having a good time right now.
Yeah, you're right. And we all talked a little earlier about how it's like almost anxiety talking about the Browns lately. And I think that's the reason. I think because Browns players feel pretty negative right now, and understandably so. So does the media, so do fans. And it's, I don't know. I've given Jarvis a hard time, but I actually love Jarvis, and I love that he was part of this team. I've given the take that he has changed the cultures of the Browns a really hard time, because I just think there's been so many more pieces of that. And I think so many media members have just pegged this storyline of Jarvis changed the culture of Cleveland to winning. And I just don't think that's the case. I think that was a mixture of so many other things, but I agree with pretty much everything you said, which makes me almost feel bad saying that, Chip, because he has been just an amazing leader, an amazing presence, an amazing teammate for a team that was in shambles at the time he showed up. And so I think both of you have a good idea of he will always be kind of at everybody's hearts. Hopefully they can make it work out, and maybe he can get a little more production here. But also, what if he does end up leaving, I will always feel like I'll still say bless him when guys catch
right down passes. I would too. I agree with that 100%. And I mean, dude, look at, like I said, you got to put yourself in his shoes, because, you know, I have all love for you guys. You're my best friends. Your success sometimes makes me jealous. So, I mean, you can only imagine him seeing his best friend get a ring and be like, damn, I want one too.
It's gotta be hard.
I want to sit down with you and be able to show both of our rings, you know? And at the moment he can't do that.
Yeah. All right. Let's keep rolling here. So real quick, Chip, you want to cover some of this Cavs weekend, because it was such a big thing. And even though we're getting late in the pod, I don't want to overlook the fact that we just finished a successful All-Star weekend involving so many Cavaliers.
Yeah, I thought it was a very successful All-Star weekend downtown. And I mean, I'm not getting that off of the TV or internet. I'm getting it out of just like the amount of people I spoke to that went downtown and just had a great time. And it seemed like everything was handled well. I thought a lot of celebrities were down there. Even Steph Curry came down here and was really cool about how, like, the crowd booed him at first, but then cheered him at the end. And, you know, it was
you
all
hit that many threes, you get cheered. That's
right.
The rule.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's a good point. But a lot of people forget that Steph Curry's an Ohio guy.
I'll
do like I always do.
LeBron.
That's what I was laughing going through Top Shot, as I can always bring up the one day, and I actually thought it was like a misprint as I was like reading through his like Curry's Top Shot moment. I was like, Akron, Ohio. Wait, did they screw this up? I was like dumbfounded. I had no idea. I was like,
him and his brother were born at the same hospital as LeBron, a couple years apart.
I was like, I must have just like missed this in my like not paying attention to basketball at a specific time or something.
Yeah. Yeah. My nephew was down there with my sister, and they took pictures with Taco Fall, with Travis Kelce, with LeVar Ball, just this random cast of characters. It was really cool for him. He had the best time ever, and I was so happy for him, and mildly jealous he got to see all those people. I think it made it more special too that it ended up being one and deservedly two Cavs making the all-star team, and then also getting to be highlighted in the Rising Stars game. And
yeah,
and it's nice to see that many Cavs.
And we won the, I mean, and the Cavs won the skills.
They did. Right, and they were just right. Having a lot of fun with it. It was just great to see them guys having a good time together.
Yeah. And the skills was funny. It wasn't our skills. It was Mobley, Jared Allen, and I'm blank.
Garland.
Garland. Yeah. And it made me laugh because the skills challenge always feels like it's kind of like a guard type of a thing. So the fact
that you're right. Some bit
out there made me laugh as they're tossing these half court threes up. So yeah, it'll be
interesting to see how these guys get some rest and come back now the second half of the season. We should be getting Markinson back. We should be a full healthy roster for the rest of the year. Well, let me knock on wood. But what I mean is we're coming into the game one return healthy. So
yeah. And you're right, with Markkanen coming back, I had forgotten he was out. Somebody brought up to me, you know, when he gets back in the lineup, and I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot how long we've been missing him and how big of a piece he was, because he kind of came out of nowhere, and he was great. And
then he was just part of the starting rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's really developing into a good player. The other thing that I was kind of thinking was, I'm hearing it a lot out here. Out west. So I was wondering where you guys are and what you're hearing about all the LeBron back to Cleveland chatter. It was as big as I thought it would be out here, and I heard it all over the place as soon as that game ended.
As cool as I think it would be, I just can't imagine a scenario of how it could happen. First of all, the trade deadline's passed. And second of all, I mean, what would he do?
He clarified it, right? He just pulled like the most baller move ever and literally told every team in the league, if you draft my kid, I will play on your team.
Yeah. And that's
like,
that's the scenario.
No, you're right. But you're talking about next year.
I was thinking more like next year. Yeah.
That's also suggesting that we have the opportunity to draft Bronny,
right.
Which he's going to be a top three.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. No, it's not going to happen.
That's going to be the really interesting thing is like, he's not that guy, but if you get LeBron for a year, well, that might just be the cost of doing business.
Maybe
not a top pick.
You pull one of those. I'm going to just give up my future of picks. Maybe like the next 3 to 4 first round picks you got, get up there and get Bronny.
Yeah. We'll see where you might be right, Dave. We'll see where he ends up along the way, and whether Chip's scenario, just trading the future just to get this super run, it would be really fun. I mean, that would honestly be the coolest story. But it's very Ken Griffey Jr.
Because if you think about it, I mean, it's not for Bronny, it's for Bron. Like, you're paying for him for a year and this child, who I don't know. I wish I knew who said it, but someone's like, hey, did anyone ask him if he wants to play with his dad? Because that seems like it would really
suck. I was literally just going to bring that up. I read that and I was going to say, you know what the best take I heard is? Did anybody ask Bronny if he wants to play with his dad? Because you know how much pressure that's got to be? Like, it's got to be hard enough just to come into the league as a James, but now you got to play with your dad? I'm like, dude, this kid has the world on his shoulders right now.
Yeah. The way Bron kind of always is shuffling and controlling the media and roster types of development, not surprised that he just makes this declaration before his son has a chance to chime in. Like, this is how it's going to happen. I'm going to be with my son that first year, and teams are going to be like, okay, I'm going to make that happen. So,
hey, son, I'm only arguably the greatest player to ever play this game. Now you have to follow my footsteps.
Yeah, good luck keeping up with this team when I leave next year. See ya.
You have to deal with me in practice every day. And yeah, like just all of that.
Oh gosh.
So we I just had to bring it up. I've heard so many stories of, wow, is this going to be the chance next year or the year after for LeBron to make one run back? So
I don't see there a scenario of him actually just like, just to be clear, I don't see there a scenario of him just being like, you know, I think I'll go back for a year. There's no need for that at this point.
His whole family, well, they have housing at least. His whole family.
He has two in LA. He can go play for the Clippers.
I was just going to say, his family's going to be like, did you just move us to LA and now you're going back to Cleveland for a year? This is like divorce material. Like,
goodbye.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with you.
Okay. So real quick, we won't get into these takes, but I wanted to go over these first mock drafts because by the time we do our next podcast in 2 weeks, these will all be different. So all I want to do to end this show, and I think it was a pretty great one, I'm excited for us, is go over some... I just realized we don't have Mel Kiper or Todd McShay in here. I'm not mad about it. I just think that's really
no, fun. But you covered all the receivers.
Oh, so we got some good mocks then. Okay, go ahead. No, keep going.
So you covered all the receivers, which is good. So go ahead.
Yeah. So basically, these first rounds of mocks, real mocks, after the Senior Bowl is done, after the college season's over, some people were doing these in like November and December, but come on, let's get real. These are when the mock draft season really begins after the Super Bowl. And they're looking, and the reason I always mock drafts is because what a freaking guessing game. Like, what a joke. But the other thing is I always read them all and I always take them to heart because I love them. So we went through a couple: Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, Dane Brugler, who is one of our favorites, I think. I went through the PFF first mock draft, and then we added the Draft Network's mock draft. And here is who we have lined up. The expectation makes a very clear picture of what most people think the Browns need, want, and where the talent in this draft is. Daniel Jeremiah, Trevon Walker. And I will tell you right now that that's the defensive lineman, the end from Georgia. And I love that pick. I love that idea. I haven't dug nearly deep enough into the draft to know whether this is good or not, or where his grade is going to be. But I'll tell you right now, that is the one outlier of this entire scenario. Everyone else is going receiver for the Browns here. And hilariously, everyone went a different receiver. Bucky Brooks has Drake London going to the Browns. And correct me if I'm wrong, is that your guy, Chip?
Wait, say that Drake again. London. I was reading what he was writing. Drake London is my guy. Here's the funny thing. Drake London is by far my guy, but I wanted to get your guys' take before I admitted that. And I'm sorry, cause you already knew it anyways, but I have reasons why I want Drake London to come to Cleveland.
You told me like months ago, you loved that kid.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. I'll just spill the beans right now. But the main reason I really love Drake London for the Cleveland Browns is because he's that big, long, lengthy guy that when Baker's overthrowing everybody, he's not going to overthrow Drake London.
That's a take that Browns lovers and Baker haters are both going to love. So I'm glad you put that out there. Yeah, I've seen Drake London in this initial run ranked anywhere from the first to the sixth receiver. And I've seen the same about other guys. So it's really going to be kind of crazy. Dale added here that Todd McShay also has the Browns taking Drake London with the first. And I don't know if that means other guys are gone, because I've seen mocks where the Browns are picking the third or fourth receiver. And I've seen mocks where the Browns are starting the run on receiver. So I'm not going to go through them all right now, but we got Drake London, Dane Brugler, who is a very fan favorite because of the amount of work and description he gives to his scouting and draft guide, has the Browns taking Garrett Wilson. I think for Clevelanders who tend to be Buckeyes fans, that's sort of the consensus dream for a lot of them.
Growing up, we always The Browns fans just always wanted whoever the Ohio State wide receiver was. Yeah. Always.
And usually it was a bad idea.
And now there's two of them.
I don't hate it. And you are right, there is two of them. Moving on directly to the PFF first edition mock draft, they had the Browns taking Chris Olave. They have Chris Olave ranked higher than I think a lot of people, which makes sense because of just of his consistency. You know, his numbers dropped this year, which I think turned a lot of people off. But when you just add his last 3 years together, he just never had a down year. He was just great. And then the Draft Network went in a totally different direction.
Yeah.
With a big, fast, and versatile receiver.
This Treylon Burks really fascinates me, and it scares me because you always knew that, in my opinion, the top four receivers were three of the guys you just named and then Jameson Wilson. I'm looking at London, Wilson, Olave, and Williams. I never even knew who Treylon Burks was until about 3 weeks ago. And now I'm not some big, you know, college breakdown analysis, but I typically know who the big names are coming in. And all of a sudden he jumped to number one. This guy scares me. And I know he's like athletically as gifted as some of the greats like DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, yeah. But as far as level of competition that this guy's been playing, I mean, I don't even know where he went to school.
He was playing at Arkansas.
He played at Arkansas. What people have said, the reason people will say he wasn't seen as much is a story we've heard before. He went to a team that had a terrible passing offense and not a good quarterback. And so that's where people will say, but we look at the plays he did make when he was given the opportunity and his size and speed and the fact that he's just turned 21. And they love the ceiling. And I'm with you. It does give me pause.
That is the big thing with the prospects.
I also heard he had a problem with separation. And he makes most of his plays just because he's bigger and stronger than most players.
Very big. Yeah, that also makes me nervous. I think those are good reasons to be nervous. And he's probably going to get tons of talk around the combine. For somebody like me, I want to look back at what the scouts say about his actual play and film against cornerbacks who may have a shot at the NFL, because I agree with you. There's a lot of red flags to these guys that just pop up as the big name. So, and then the only other one I kind of came across, and this is kind of the last one, was the Orange and Brown report. And they also had the Browns taking Garrett Wilson. I think that's the most common person I saw, but I saw a handful of Ohio or Cleveland based mocks. And the reason I brought that one up is I wanted to ask you guys, do you guys trust those kind of mocks, like ones that come out of Cleveland media? Cause I always have this feeling that they mock a little less honestly to the team and a little more ideally to, oh, look who fell to us, exactly who I wanted. You know,
yeah.
Kind of like they know who they want the Browns to get, and the mocks just keep ending up with that person. So I didn't know. What do you guys think of that?
I tend to look more nationally just because I think a lot of those folks are just more plugged into what's going on in the NFL, like as a whole, and have better resources as far as just like ears and I know local. They know what's going on inside the building, but like, I don't know. Some of the more national folks really do like prospect breakdown and analysis. And I just can't imagine that a ton of that is being done locally. Like, you're not getting that from us. Like, we're not grinding tape to give you who we think the best like prospects are. We'll review what others have put together and talk about who we would like. But we're not gonna pass that off as like we have to take Wilson or Olave or whoever, just because like that, we're not gonna like sugarcoat or bullshit you. Like we don't know. I'm actually intrigued to see what happens post combine, because the weight height numbers are interesting, but let's be realistic. Like if those are off by an inch or two or 10 pounds, like, it's not going to be surprising, but that makes a big difference in a lot of like teams' models and their analytics too.
And see, don't be shocked too if Andrew Berry looks at the makeup of his team, looks at Baker Mayfield, looks at at Donovan Peoples-Jones and has some receivers rated very similarly and picks the one that fits.
See, I'm more interested to see what happens after free agency because I think all these mocks going receiver, I think we could take a first-round defensive tackle and address our receiver in free agency, but we'll get to that to another show. But that being said, I still have Drake London as my number one.
Okay. Yeah, and the more I read, so I just started looking at this week. So to be honest, it's not like I watched some college football, but I just started to look at the PFF draft guide, which I'll make sure to send you guys. I still haven't looked through Dane Brugler's draft guide. And then I like things like Walter Football and the Draft Network and reading some of their stuff and not only seeing their grading on some of these guys and where they project them, but seeing the descriptions of where their weaknesses and strengths are and seeing what I think about that. You know, do I think a guy who has a lot of athletic upside but is really raw or bad at route running is a great fit for the Browns right now, seeing what they did with Jarvis Landry versus Odell Beckham? No, I do not. I think somebody who is going to come in and be able to run crisp routes and be able to consistently catch the ball, to me, seeing what I've seen, might be more appealing than somebody who's just really fast and can get down the field, because they did not make nearly the use of those receivers as they have the guys who are more precise. And you know, we'll get more into that as we go, but that's kind of stuff we'll look at it.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into that. I actually have a slightly different take than I used to be completely on board with that, but I think in the last couple of years I've starting to actually stray away from that a little bit. So I'm excited to get
into it. Everything I say is
before we close out, I want to make a fun little bet with you here, Chad, and it goes to your point about the comical local Cleveland mock drafts, which I follow and read constantly and love every bit of them.
Yeah, I still look at them.
Somebody will mock Thibodeau to Cleveland at the 13th pick. That's my bet. Who really is like the top? He's like the top defensive
end. You say that, and I immediately believe it. And I actually won't make that bet with you. I think that actually really probably will happen. I think you're spot on. I think we're going to see. I think people are going to mock receivers for like the next month, and then somebody's going to go, you know what? The receiver class is deep. I think the Browns are going to go this direction, which is actually very possible. I agree with your take earlier.
They'll throw four quarterbacks in front of us.
Whatever realistic. They got to do to get the top edge guy.
Yes. They're like, two people trade up ahead of the Browns to take a quarterback and a different guy, and then all of a sudden this guy is available out of nowhere.
So keep your eye out for that, just for entertainment value. But
you're probably right. I think you're right.
Or they mock us to like trade up four picks.
Yes, I saw one of those already, and I just thought, dude, it's too early in the season to start mocking these crazy trades. So coming into next week, just so you guys know, we are taking the week off again. Our next podcast will be 2 weeks from now. I believe that's going to be recorded March 8th. So it'll be out that night or by morning, March 9th. That's going to be right after the start of the combine goes on. So we're going to get some combine stories. We're going to get a look at realignment of everybody's kind of boards and how these prospects, we mentioned most of the receivers already today, where they end up being shifted once people see their speed, what's really important to me, their quickness drills, like the cone drill. By then, franchise tags are going to be starting, so we'll know a little bit more about that. And then we'll also be going into possible free agent targets, because the week after that, free agency will be starting. And that, again, will very much change our draft board and our team need list. So it's going to be a good one. Make sure you guys are here for it. And along the way, make sure you like and subscribe to Coast, the number 2 Coast X3, Coast to Coast x3 on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm hearing from some of our listeners that was the easiest way to find the podcast on whatever their platform was. They just typed in Coast to Coast X3 and and our podcast popped up easier, because I know it can be a little hard to find. We gave it a complicated name. And
we might need to work something might need to work something a little different in the office.
Yeah, we've got some brainstorming to do. We'll see. But yeah, we've got some brainstorming to do. I didn't realize that there was 600 podcasts named Coast to Coast something else. And that kind of drowns us down at the bottom. But the more likes and follows we get, the easier it'll be to find. So like, subscribe to the podcast. Yeah. It's going to be fun to keep up with some of this stuff, because it can really come at you from 100 directions. And we'll try to kind of streamline it for you.
Hey, real quick, and I don't want to drag this on, but every time I hear Coast to Coast, does anybody else think of that old Cartoon Network late night? There was like an old Coast to Coast.
Space Ghost.
Yeah, Space Ghost. Coast to Coast. Yeah, Space Ghost.
No, I didn't think of it, but now I'm always going to.
Yeah. So I'll leave you on that.
Thank you for that. That's like telling somebody a theme song to get stuck in the back of their head. Perfect. All right. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. It's been another fun one, and we will catch you in 2 weeks. I hope you can survive without us, all 16 of you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. Also, good talking to you guys.
Yep.
All right, we'll see you.